Do you ever struggle with the question, if God is good, why is there suffering? We unpack this timeless question in a free chapter download from Why You Can Believe. It's called Why Does God Allow Suffering? And it's honest, hopeful, and deeply personal. From free will to a broken world, to the way suffering can lead us to God, this chapter will equip you with real biblical insight. Get your free download today at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources.
Well, good afternoon and welcome along to the programme. I'm Justin Brierley, your host between now and 4 o'clock for Unbelievable. Yes, it's the part of our Saturday afternoon sweep of programming in Faith Explored when we look at different perspectives on some kind of a question or another. Don't forget you can find this show, Unbelievable, online at premier.org.uk/Unbelievable. Many past programmes that you can find there, features, resources, and of course links to my guests who are joining me on today's programme. So let me introduce you to the topic at hand as we ask, is the Mormon Church suffering a crisis of faith?
You're unbelievable.
And we're asking that in light of a recent article that came up on the New York Times recently. It features the story of Hans Mattson, a high-ranking Mormon leader in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Europe. Well, he's recently gone public with his doubts about the church, especially historical claims in the Book of Mormon and the character of its founder, Joseph Smith. He's among a number of Mormons leaving the church, it's claimed, after investigating the history of the Mormon church online. Well, joining me in the studio today to talk about this is Russ East. Russ was born into a fourth generation Mormon home before leaving the Mormon church aged 14. We'll find out his story. Brian Hales is a long-standing member, continuing member of the Mormon church in Utah, and he joins me on the line from Utah today. Thank you very much, gentlemen, both for joining me. Russ, we'll come to you first of all to get a bit of background. Thank you for being on the program today.
Pleasure to be here.
Russ, what I didn't manage to get to in that introduction was that you now run Utah Partnerships for Christ. So having grown up in a Mormon home, you're sort of, as it were, on the other side of the fence trying to reach Mormons in Utah.
Right.
From a Christian gospel perspective.
Right. You know, my grandfather was a polygamist. He left my grandmother to join with a group called the Church of the Firstborn in the 1950s in Utah. He gave the offer to my mother to be a part of that particular sect or break off of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church. And he told her that if she were to join up with it, they would take care of her and she would marry an older man. But if she decided to leave it, they would go after her to kill her. And I know that sounds very sensationalistic. Mm. But that's exactly what my mom told me, and I know she wouldn't lie to me about that. So after I got saved out of the LDS church, I just had a burden to want to reach Mormons for Christ. I want them to see that Jesus is enough. I don't want them just to leave the LDS church into nothingness, or atheism, agnosticism, so forth. I sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, want LDS people to understand the Jesus of the Bible and that they can have their sins forgiven and know him and have a relationship with God.
So what happened to you then at the age of 14? Can you describe
sure,
what happened
sure.
in your own story?
Well, when I was 14 years old, I had seen many pictures of the founder of the Mormon church, Joseph Smith. He went into the woods, he prayed, he wanted to know what was the one true church, and so he had questions. And I think that's appropriate to bring up because when people have questions, I think those in LDS authority should be willing to give good answers. Because here's the founder of the Mormon church, the restorer of the gospel as it's taught. He had questions, and Heavenly Father and Jesus appeared to him supposedly and gave him the answers that he was looking for without rebuke and very clearly and so on. So as a young man, I thought, I want that same kind of experience. So I went behind my house into the woods. I knelt down. I looked up into the woods, up in the trees in the summer of 1979. And I wanted that same closeness that I saw Joseph Smith having, that communion with Heavenly Father and with Jesus. Now, nothing happened that day, but I believe God heard my prayer. He saw my heart, because soon after that, we were invited to go visit Santa Rosa Bible Church, where the gospel of Jesus Christ was being preached. I heard the gospel, and the Lord touched my heart, and it was explained to me as a gift, and I received that gift. And then I went to my room, and I said, Lord, what do I do now? I've grown up as a Mormon. I go to this Bible church. Now what? He led me to Galatians chapter 1, and it said, if any man preach any other gospel unto other than what you have received, let him be accursed. So I said before, so say I now again, if any man or any angel preach any other gospel unto you than that which you have received, let him be accursed. And I knew that I needed to just disband with what I'd been taught all my life and just go after Jesus Christ and the Bible alone.
So that was the story. You now, as I mentioned, run Utah Partnerships for Christ. You're based out there in Utah doing that. Specifically, I know you've got a link up with Bobby Gilpin over here in the UK, who runs UK Partnerships for Christ. He's been on the show before doing dialogue with Mormon in the past. And very specifically, that aim is to reach Mormons who you believe have been sort of given a false history and a false gospel as well in some way.
Well, you can imagine it's very disillusioning if you've been taught something your whole life. Imagine when you learn something about your faith and it's not true, it's devastating. Imagine if your spouse cheated on you or something. It's horrific. And so what we want to do at our ministry is we want to be able to communicate the gospel to those who are Mormon in a way that will make sense, because there are a lot of terms that we both use, but we have different definitions. We want to help those people that are wanting to seek after Jesus, but not within the context of the LDS Church, and not be intimidated that if they leave the LDS Church to follow Christ, that they're going to somehow have their priesthood blessings taken away. They're not going to possibly be accepted in their communities, especially in Utah. And I know this happens. I talk to people and it's awful. And I just want to be there for people to say, hey, there is another community of people that love Jesus Christ with all their hearts. It's not when you leave the LDS Church, it's not always people that just want to go out and live riotous living or something along those lines. It's because they've been touched by God and they realize that it's not the church, it's not an organization, it's Jesus.
In your experience, when Mormons do leave the Mormon church, on average, do they sort of say, well, that's it, I'm done with religion, full stop? Or are they open to, well, maybe I was just mistaken about aspects of this Christ?
It's a mixed bag, but there's definitely a good number of people that just need to decompress and take a break from anything that has a religious tone to it. And then it seems like when they seem to can breathe a little bit, then an opportunity, a friend comes along and says, hey, would you like to join me for a Bible study? And we've done that on meetup.com for people, and just be there for them and allow them to ask questions and give them answers. And so there's a combination of those situations. But
well, thank you for coming in today, Russ, while you've been over in the UK just recently doing some speaking engagements. Great to have you in the studio today. On the line, though, joining me to have this discussion on the other side of that coin is Brian Hales. Brian is a longstanding member of the Mormon Church out in Utah. He's the author of a number of books on the history of Mormon, especially concerning the history of its founder, Joseph Smith, and the issue of polygamy. Brian, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
It's great to have you on the line, Brian. I know we're going to have a really interesting discussion today. We've already heard, though, Russ's background. Do you want to maybe just sketch out a little bit of your own background as far as your Mormon faith goes?
Well, I've been raised in the church just like Russ was, and served as a Mormon missionary in Venezuela many years ago. And throughout my life, I've had questions about our own faith, and they led me to do some research on Joseph Smith, but curiously, I've come to a very different conclusion from Russ. My research, which has taken me into the archives of the church, into every known document dealing with that topic of plural marriage, has strengthened my convictions that Joseph Smith was a true prophet of the living God. And the issue that Russ brought up, I think we need to kind of clarify. People quote Galatians 1 and 8 quite commonly, saying, I've got the gospel over here, and you guys are listening to some angel from heaven teaching a different gospel. But there are other scriptures that talk about a restitution of truth in the latter days and an angel coming forth to restore these things to the earth, which would require a prophet like Joseph Smith. And I'm not sure that the argument that because something is new that it must not be from God is a very strong argument, because things do fall away. There are apostasies from the truth, and I'm sorry to hear about Russ's experience. He reflected some negative things, and that's very sad. I think we Latter-day Saints here could be a little more open-minded to those who may have different beliefs, but at the same time, we hold to our beliefs very dearly because we believe them to be true.
And I have to confess, in my years of doing this show, there's always been an openness that I've found from Mormons, those from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, to discuss these issues. They're on the table, and people seem to be facing up to the fact that they're issues to discuss. Not the first time we've done this. Very different story when it comes to my attempts to get Jehovah's Witnesses to do dialogues, which often seems to be closed down very early on in terms of any the governing body, as it were. But, Brian, obviously, you've got a very different experience then of the Mormon faith to Russ. We're going to hear in a moment the story of Hans Mattson, and I'd like you to sort of reflect yourself on whether or not the internet and the fact that now information like never before is available to people about the history of Mormonism and Joseph Smith is making an impact on various members of the church. Why don't we just quickly give those who maybe want to interact with today's show a chance to feedback. If you want to give us your thoughts on today's show, why not email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can also get in touch via the Facebook and Twitter accounts. That's all available from the show website at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Click there to get today's show, to get links to my guests, Russ and Brian. And I'm going to also post up a link to the New York Times article that is sort of forming the basis of our discussion today about Hans Mattson. Now, he is a high-ranking Mormon leader, or at least was until recently. He's recently gone public with his doubts about the church, especially the historical claims in the Book of Mormon and the character of its founder, Joseph Smith. Well, unfortunately, we were unable to arrange an interview with Hans in time for today's show. But what we do have is the audio of a video that accompanies that New York Times article in which Mattson talks to Laurie Goodstein about his doubts.
My whole world was crashing. I was born and raised. I didn't know anything about this. The church was wonderful. It was true. The church was guided by Jesus himself. And now when I'm reading this, and I started to understand that I need the strength to accept the truth.
Hans Mattson grew up in the Mormon church in Sweden and became a high-ranking leader who helped oversee the church throughout Europe. Now he is publicly sharing his doubts about the history and teachings of the church.
So how did you go from being in a position of helping teach people about the faith to having doubts about the faith?
When members are using the internet, as I usually call a crystal ball, you can't hide anything, everything is there, they find out a lot of questions about it, especially about the church history. And of course, being a kind of a high leader in the church, I also have those questions to me, and I have to try to deal with them. And when I did that, we found out that the church, as I look at it, didn't give me any answers, really.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as the Mormon Church is formally known, has always taught that the Book of Mormon, its core scripture, is historically true. But in the era of the Internet, church members have access to information that appears contradictory. For example, there is no DNA evidence to support the Book of Mormon's claims that American Indians descended from Jews, or that steel swords existed when the book says they were used.
Is the Book of Mormon historical or not? The blacks and the priesthood, why did the blacks didn't have the priesthood? Was it a prophet, really?
To its credit, the church has made volumes of documents about its founder and prophet, Joseph Smith, available to historians. But those documents reveal things that the church doesn't teach most of its members, such as the fact that Joseph Smith took many wives, some very young.
But when you study this history, you find that there are girls working in Joseph Smith's home, as you call them, maidens. They clean and wash and things. And those are the girls he married. And Emma, his first wife, wouldn't know about it. And for me, that's terrible. You've just been 14, 15 years, and you put so much pressure on them, and you can read the letters, what he wrote to them.
The church says it is trying to be transparent and that believers in every church have doubts. But when Mr. Mattson brought his questions to his superiors, he says they told him to stay silent.
What I felt kind of sad about, and I felt I didn't really like, was that they said that you're not supposed to talk to your wife, your children. You don't to talk about these issues in church.
Hans Mattson says he is not alone in suffering a crisis of faith and that there are consequences. Mormons who admit their doubts can be prohibited from attending weddings and baptisms, and friends and family members sometimes cut off contact.
Really, why I'm sitting here and why I'm here in the United States is because I can see that there are so many friends of mine, members in the church, that are being hurt. They're going through a terrible faith crisis, as I did. I mean, I've been in this for 8 years, and today I feel quite normal about this. But why shall they be so hurt by that? Just because the church is not telling the whole story or the true story. My hope is that the church will grow more larger in acceptance that you are allowed to have doubts, because I think a doubter is a seeker. I mean, you can go to Joseph Smith. Why did he pray? He was asking what to do. So he was a doubter, wasn't he? And I think that's great. You find answers.
There you go. That was the audio from the New York Times feature, which you can find online, and I will post with today's podcast at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. The story of Hans Mattson there, who has had a crisis of faith, one of the highest ranking Mormon leaders in the European wing of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Just again, a quick quote here from the article before we come to you, Brian, to respond to that. Laurie Goodstein writes, "Around the world and in the United States, where the faith was founded, the Mormon Church is grappling with a wave of doubt and disillusionment among members who encountered information on the internet that sabotaged what they were taught about their faith, according to interviews with dozens of Mormons and those who study the church." OK, so what do you make of this whole Hans Mattson story? Be interested in your response, Brian.
Well, I think he brings up some very good points. Throughout the history of the Mormon Church, and this began in 1830 with a revelation Joseph Smith dictated that said that Joseph and the other leaders needed to give gospel meat to those that could handle it and give gospel milk to those that couldn't handle the meat. And, of course, Peter refers to this and Paul refers to this same concept. And so for many years, the more controversial topics have not been discussed in our Sunday schools or in our magazines. And polygamy is certainly something that we would consider to be gospel meat, and some of these other things might also be in that category. But the internet has changed all of that, because with one click, you can access things of our temple that are sacred to us, whatever the idea, it's out there. And so the church is needing to respond to that, and they have been rather slow, I think by about any standard, to actually do that, but they are. I know that they are preparing a website that will address all of these issues, all of the hard questions. The answers are there. I know this because I know people that are involved with it. But again, you could argue that maybe it's slower than it would have been ideal. The issue, though, of Hans, it makes me feel bad for him. I, when we hear some of these things historically, it can create some doubts. The problem with particularly polygamy as it's portrayed on the internet is that it is full of half-truths and misinformation. And you've mentioned several things here that Hans did. He said, you know, that Joseph married young girls. Well, he was sealed to them. We need to understand that sexual relations did occur in some of these, but the primary reason for these marriages was that Joseph Smith taught that all men and women that are going to make it to the top of the celestial kingdom, and in Mormon speak, that's the highest heaven, but that every person there is married. And the primary reason for polygamy was to allow all worthy women to have a husband and to be sealed to them, because apparently there would be more worthy women at the judgment than men. And there were other reasons for it, but that was the primary reason that Joseph taught. It wasn't sexual, and the evidence that he was driven by his libido is just not there historically. And if somebody disagrees, then let's talk evidence, because you've got so many authors that are reading between the lines and giving you us their speculations, and that portray Joseph as this womanizer and this libertine, when in fact, if we get to the actual historical documentation, it is not accurate. And so, but what's out there is going to cause somebody to doubt, and this is why the LDS Church leaders, and this is why I have my website. I'm just saying, let's get the evidence out there on these topics and let people decide. But this misinformation and this spin of the evidence that has come out from author after author after author on the topic of polygamy, anyway, we really need to cut through that and get some documentary transparency so that people will be able to see what actually happened.
Okay. Well, let's hear again from you, Russ. Russ, obviously when you had your conversion out of Mormonism, the internet was not a factor in that. But obviously of late, I'm sure it's become very apparent that this is a major reason for lots of people that you encounter who do come to question their Mormon beliefs, presumably.
Yes, you know, something that comes to my mind, something that Brian mentioned in his opening comments, that if I could just go back quickly, he mentioned about a restoration that was needed and an apostasy and so forth. I would like to just let Brian know that I have no spirit of contention whatsoever. I have just love for you, Brian, and for the LDS people. So, Brian, I want you to know that. So hopefully you'll hear that through my passion and my voice here. And I hope to get together with you since my family lives in Ogden and you're in Layton, so we're neighbors down the street. So like I said earlier before the show started, we'll get together, have lunch together, and talk some more. But do you mind if I ask Brian a question?
Yeah, go ahead. This is a conversation, okay. Guys. So okay. Feel free to do that. Yeah,
Brian, I just have a question for you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Do you believe in the Book of in Nephi? In the Book of Mormon, Jesus asked the three Nephites, the 12 disciples that he sets up in the Americas, what would you want? And there's three of them who say, well, we want what John has. And that's the fact that John, apparently, according to LDS teaching, that he lives forever. He's still on the earth, roaming the earth somewhere. And so my question to you, my friend, is if Peter, James, and John gave Joseph Smith the Melchizedek priesthood, apparently there's some type of priesthood, you know, that he has, they have power to give. If John had that, and then these three Nephites were given, they had priesthood authority. So now we have four people that are still roaming the earth, according to Mormon teaching. Could you help me understand where the apostasy comes into place there? Do you see where I'm going with that? Have you ever thought about that before?
Wow, Rush, yeah, we should go out to dinner. That sounds great. And of all of the questions that I thought you might present in this setting, I have to tell you that that's really kind of out there. But Joseph Smith was chosen, we believe, even before he came to this earth to be the head of a dispensation. And the fact that there were others who might have had that authority, they didn't hold the sealing keys. And we're getting into some pretty deep stuff here, Justin. I don't know if we want to go there, but things were restored through Joseph Smith that those men would not necessarily have held. And Joseph, in our belief, was designated even before he was born to be the one to lead the church in that day. I mean, it sounds like you want us to have one of these beings pop up on the grid and suddenly head a church, and these were translated beings, we believe. Again, we're getting into some stuff I'm not sure the listeners are going to understand.
Yeah, you've lost me already, I'm afraid, to some extent.
It's something we can talk about later, sure. Since you brought up the apostasy, I had to just bring that up to you and just ask you if you'd ever thought about those things, just as a devoted LDS person, if that was ever a question that you may have had in your growing up in the LDS church.
Well, why don't we talk about it over lunch or something? I'm
sure.
More than happy to respond. I think it's a problem, and anyway, we won't bore the listener with that.
Sure.
Well, I'm happy for the conversation to go wherever you guys want to take it, really. But we'll come back to you in a moment's time, Brian, because we want to get into some of the meat of perhaps not the full gospel meat, but at least an idea of what some of these objections are that Hans Mattson really contributed to his crisis of faith, so to speak. But just before we go to a quick break. Again, Russ, do you want to kind of give a little bit of a reaction to Hans's story first
of
all?
I think when you hear Hans Mattson, when you hear him speak, I sense a sincerity in his voice. I don't sense a hatred or as what some people call as anti-Mormon. And I hope, Brian, you don't feel that there's a hatred or anything. It's just a man who has spent 8 years who has painstakingly gone through these things. And I just pray, one of my hopes is that the LDS Church would be more, I guess you could say, gentle and kinder to someone who, I hope to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with Hans and let him see that Jesus Christ alone is enough, and that the LDS Church should encourage its membership to not shun Hans Mattson, to you see what I mean? I guess that's the thing, and that's the thing I've noticed in Utah. I can think of more than one example where people who have these questions and then they leave it, and then they follow, they're following Christ. It doesn't matter. It's families are shunned, and people are shunned, and people can lose their spouse. And I'm not making this up. So
well, we'll come to some of those questions and allow Brian to respond in just a moment's time. Russ is with me here in the studio. Russ East was born into a fourth generation Mormon home before he left the church at age 14 after a conversion experience. He now runs Utah Partnerships for Christ. He's been over here doing some events with UK Partnerships for Christ, run by Bobby Gilpin. On the phone from Utah is Brian Hales, a long-standing member of the LDS Church. He's the author of a number of books on the history of the Mormon Church and Joseph Smith. And we're asking today, is the Mormon Church suffering a crisis of faith? So join me again in a moment's time as we continue today's discussion on Unbelievable.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the program with me, Justin Brierley. Yes, this is the talking shop for Christians where we engage all kinds of different perspectives, views and beliefs. Well, today on the program, we're talking about the Mormon Church, or to give it its formal title, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They've got millions of members all over the world. It all began 150 odd years ago when Joseph Smith claimed to have a new revelation of Jesus Christ. Well, Brian Hales joins us on the phone today. He's a long-standing member of the Mormon Church. He's a historian in the area specifically of Joseph Smith, its founder, and claims around the polygamy of Joseph Smith. That was one of the issues that caused Hans Mattson to have a crisis of faith recently. His story has been featured in the New York Times. He's one of the highest-ranking Mormon leaders in Europe, but he's says that he's gone public with his doubts about the church after various issues around the historicity of the Book of Mormon, issues around why black men were excluded from the priesthood until 1978, and indeed questions around the polygamy of Joseph Smith. This was what he said to the New York Times. I felt like I had an earthquake under my feet. Everything I'd been taught, everything I'd been proud to preach about and witness about just crumbled under my feet. It was such a terrible psychological and nearly physical disturbance. And we're asking today, is this true in a wider setting in the Mormon Church? Has the advent of the internet, easily accessible facts about the Mormon Church and its history, is it causing a crisis of faith for the Mormon Church? Russ East is also with us in the studio. He's a former Mormon up until the age of 14 when he left the Mormon Church, became a Christian, and is now running Utah Partnerships for Christ. So if you want to get in touch, you can do that by emailing unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Oh, we even reached the end of the music. Don't normally do that. If you want to get in touch as well via Facebook and Twitter, I'll be giving out the ways to do that a little bit later on too. premier.org.uk/unbelievable for more information on my guests and today's programme. Okay, Brian, coming back to you quickly. This issue of, you know, perhaps it's too sensational a claim, is the Mormon Church suffering a crisis of faith as a whole? I know that, in a way, the Mormon Church has more members than it has ever had at any time in history previous. But what's your response to this general issue of people rolling up with these facts about the Mormon Church, asking more questions, getting to more of these, as you call it, gospel meat issues?
Well, let me first just say, when Russ says that, you know, if somebody leaves our church, that maybe the neighbors or the other Latter-day Saints around them are not as friendly as they should be. Unfortunately, I believe that does happen, but it happens in contradiction to our teachings. We're supposed to reach out to those people. So it's a sad story, but Mormons aren't perfect, and when somebody kind of leaves the faith, they leave a lot of social interactions that are just built into the church, and if they feel ostracized because of that, that's just unfortunate, because Mormons teach that we should reach out and love all of our, you know, fellow men, regardless of their religious beliefs. So I feel sad about that report, Russ, and I know we can do better. Now, getting to the issue of crisis, though, I'd like to talk about my personal experience with researching my three volumes. I've written 1,500 plus pages on Joseph Smith and plural marriage. It was published earlier this year. But I'm a physician by training, and I didn't have time to go out and do the field research, and I hired a research assistant. His name is Don Bradley, and Don was out of the church. He served a mission for the Mormon Church, but he had had an atheist moment in his life, very profound, and it was 2 or 3 years before we came together to work together, and he had asked to have his name removed. He'd been excommunicated from the Mormon Church, and I didn't know this at the time. I just knew he was a good researcher and that he didn't go to church on Sunday, because sometimes we'd meet on Sunday. But for 2 years, I sent him to every repository to find every known document on the topic of polygamy. It didn't matter where it came from, anti-Mormon or apologetic and everything in between. I wanted him to get it all. And 2 years is about how long it took. We sent him back to every known repository that in the U.S. To find all of these documents that I could use to write these books. Well, 6 months after we had finished our work together, he called me and said, "Brian, I was just rebaptized into the church." And I offer this and he's a very active believing Latter-day Saint today. And here's a guy who has seen every known document on this very controversial topic, one of the topics that caused Hans Mattson to leave the church. And he's seen it all. He's seen, you know, 100 times more than Hans has seen. And he's getting back into the church. So I think that it's important that when we talk about these topics that we get good information, because Don has good information on this topic and he believes. And I honestly believe that if we could get good information on all of Hans's concerns, that he would see that those concerns have not been properly or correctly, accurately represented to him from the sources that he has been reading.
Okay, Russ, you've been interested in your response.
Well, sure. I'd like to offer a resource written by someone named Doris Hansen. She was born and raised in a Mormon fundamentalist group, and she's written a book called "Is Polygamy Biblical? An In-Depth Look at What the Bible Has to Say About Plural Marriage." And I would just encourage anyone to go to our website, upfc.org, send me an email, and I'll mail this to you free of charge. This will just give you, I believe, a biblical context of this whole topic, and I think that'll be a very helpful thing. So I wanted to make that available to any of your listeners at any time. And then also, I just thought I'd ask Brian his take on a historical point in time when William Law was a was basically, it was his wife, I guess, that was approached by Joseph Smith. William Law was one of Joseph Smith's leading men, like a right-hand man, a second counselor, I believe, around 1843. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. But however, as Joseph Smith approached William Law's wife to be one of his plural wives and she rejected him, William Law was rather upset, and he created a newspaper called the Nauvoo Expositor, which exposed the whole idea of polygamy and so forth going on. And then what happened after that, a lot of people don't really talk about, and maybe you can tell me, Brian, if you think this is hearsay, but from what I've gathered and the research I've done in the past is I've seen a copy of this newspaper. The printing press was destroyed by Joseph Smith's followers, and that's really what led him into the Carthage jail, because he had violated one of the amendments of the Constitution, freedom of the press. Am I just speaking kind of out there, or is that a reasonable assessment of history? I'd just like to bring that to you.
Go ahead, Brian.
Well, we're getting fairly specific. I'd refer you to Chapter 31 in Volume 2, because I spent a whole chapter discussing all of this. The interaction between Joseph Smith and William Law and his wife Jane can be is confusing, because there's documents that support five different interpretations, and you only picked one of them, and that was that Joseph approached Jane and wanted to marry her. But actually, the documentation supports that Jane approached Joseph because her husband William was an adulterer and could not be sealed to Jane. Keep in mind that we believe that these marriages are for eternity, but if somebody is an adulterer, he would not be eligible. And there's the evidence is there that William Law was an adulterer, and so he couldn't be sealed to Jane. And so Jane approached Joseph Smith to be sealed to him as an eternal wife, meaning that it would not be on earth. It would only be for the next life. We call those eternity-only sealings. And it sounds a little strange and new, but Joseph Smith taught that every man, every woman needed to be sealed to a spouse in the next life if they wanted to be exalted or to get to the highest heaven that he described. So, you know, when as far as the expositor and everything goes, you're completely accurate on that. William Law didn't like what was going on, whether it was because Joseph wouldn't allow him to be sealed to Jane or because of something else. William Law did print the expositor. Joseph did respond, and part of that response was to destroy the press, which was not lawful. Joseph offered to pay for a new press when he met with the governor, Thomas Ford. Ford wouldn't let him do that, instead brought him up to the law, and while he was being held, as you know, Carthage jail was rushed and Joseph was shot by a mob. So, you know, the latter half of what you said is completely accurate, but the first half, just get into the documents. They're right there in my Chapter 31.
Yeah, I mean, these are all really interesting details about the life of Joseph Smith and so on. And what's interesting about, as it were, him being a modern-day prophet, Brian, is that we do have quite a bit of documentary evidence about him, letters, other people's accounts at the time and so on. I mean, obviously he's revered for his position in the Mormon Church as its founder. Almost, I would say... along with, you know, heroes of the faith like Abraham, Moses, Jesus Christ himself. So I guess it's important for the Mormon Church to, as it were, defend his reputation as far as it's possible with the documentation that's out there.
Well, it's interesting that the head of the Joseph Smith Papers Project, Ron Esplin, and what that project is trying to do, and they will do, is publish every document from Joseph, irrespective of whether we think it's going to, you know, be strengthened or not the church membership. They're going to publish it all. This is a church-owned press, a church-owned project. But this Ron Esplin, who is the managing editor, just says we're going to publish it all, and we're confident that Joseph Smith will do just fine. And I kind of feel that same way, that when it comes to the topic of plural marriage, of polygamy, that if we could just get the documents out there, Joseph does just fine.
Okay. What's your take on this, Russ? Does the story, the history of Joseph himself, play into the issues you have with Mormonism? Is it a bigger issue than that?
Right. That's exactly what I'm thinking of in a sense. And that I can't help but think, Brian, of a very famous hymn that was written titled "Praise to the Man," and if if our listeners were to go to YouTube and type in "Praise to the Man," they'll hear the Missionary Training Center missionaries sing in beautiful harmony, the men and the women, and maybe you've heard this song or you've sung it yourself. But to me, it really puts Joseph Smith at a place that he should never be, regardless of what is the truth of this man, if he comes out okay or not. I just have to tell you that it burdens my heart, it breaks my heart that a man would be lifted up so high that part of the chorus in this song is that it says, "Mingling with gods, he will plan for his brethren. Millions shall know brother Joseph again. Traitors and tyrants now fight him in vain." You know, and so I don't know what your thoughts are on that. That's a kind of a little different topic here, but just something else really quick that comes to my mind is that when Jesus was asked this question about plural marriage and things, he seemed to be very specific, and he said there's no marriage in heaven. And I just think that's good for our listeners to remember. We don't have time to go into in depth in the context of all these things, but also Jesus talked about having one husband, one wife, and 1 Corinthians 7:2 says each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. But again, this resource by shieldandrefuge.org, Doris Hansen, I really want to get that in the hands of people.
So your concern then, just before we come to Brian, Russ, is that Joseph Smith has been given a place, almost semi-divine status that he really shouldn't have. With yes. any proper understanding of
right. We don't sing songs about Moses and Noah and so on, but in the LDS Church they really do. And if you can tell me different, Brian, then I'm all ears. But
and then on top of that, the fact that you feel the polygamy that Joseph Smith did espouse and enact is at odds with Orthodox Christian teaching and the
absolutely.
Teaching of Jesus.
Absolutely. There's nothing redeeming to me about whether there was sexual activity in this type of arrangement. God made Adam and Eve, and that was the pattern, and we could go through a number of concepts that we find in the Bible, but this is very simple.
And you heard at the beginning there, Brian, Russ say that for him, his conversion was about the fact that he didn't see that in the end that there was any need for anything more than Jesus, as it were. And is it true, this accusation that Joseph Smith almost has this deity kind of a view of him within the Mormon Church?
Well, I kind of think of this on two levels. First off, Russ knows very well that while we revere him as the leading prophet of this dispensation, and other similar prophets were Moses and Abraham, we put Enoch in that group, Adam, Peter, and these are individuals who were chosen in our beliefs to head up a new dispensation where people would get truth from heaven and then it would be dispersed on earth. And Joseph certainly is in that category. But to say that we revere him in anything like the Savior Jesus Christ is just nonsense, and Russ knows this. I don't think he's necessarily trying to say that, but it's not a good criticism of our church. Anybody who attends our church will know that we think Joseph was a great prophet, and we're grateful for him, but Jesus Christ is the only way back to heaven, and he offers me Jesus Christ. Well, I can tell you, I find a Jesus Christ in my own worship within the LDS Church, and he is dear to me. And some people will say Mormons aren't Christians, and it just breaks my heart because I love the Savior. And we know so much more about Jesus Christ because of the revelations of Joseph Smith. We believe that Jesus Christ visited people besides those in Palestine. And if you read the Book of Mormon in the Third Nephi section, you can read about how he visited them and showed his love to them and prayed for them, healed their sick. And we have other revelations and scriptures that tell us more about Christ. And so if somebody wants to know about Christ, then Joseph Smith has given us extra things that go
He'll
take the Bible away.
Russ wants to chip in here.
Sure, sure. There's a couple of passages in the Book of Mormon. One is 2 Nephi 25:23. The other is Moroni 10:31-32. And Brian, I would just like to know from you, as you know those verses, the Nephi verse, we are saved by grace after all we can do. And in the Moroni passage where it says, if we have to deny ourselves of all ungodliness, then is his grace sufficient for us? I'm just really hoping that you and I could come to agreement on this, is that if you and I both tried to pole vault over the Grand Canyon, you might get a little further than me, or I might get a little further than you, but neither of us are going to make the other side. And the idea that if we just do our best and Jesus does the rest, or this idea that if we do all that we can do, what happens if, here's my question, what if in one moment of time, Brian, you or I don't do our all? To me, that's the biggest crisis of faith that an LDS person has. It's the realization that they have not, they in one moment of time, if there's a distraction, if there's a sin of some sort, maybe you can clarify this for me, but those are two passages that really seem to seal in a negative way any opportunity that one has of receiving grace, because no one can do all they can do. But we've failed. We've fallen short.
Yeah. Well, I agree with everything that you said, Russ, and in our theology, you seem to be saying that Mormons have to be perfect or they can't make it to the Mormon heaven, and that's not what we believe, and you know this. Joseph Smith, in his own prayer, he said that I'm not perfect, but I have sincerely striven, I've sincerely strove to be perfect, and that is where we want to be. We want to be trying to do all that we can. That's how his spirit is with us, as we strive to keep his commandments, because if we don't keep his commandments, his love will not be with us. He is the only way, he tells us, that he can make us holy. We don't make ourselves holy. That's nonsense. And that is not a Mormon teaching, and if somebody thinks it is, then they're misunderstanding our message. But if we are trying and doing our best, then the promise of the Book of Mormon is that God will hold that person guiltless. Okay, not because he is guiltless, but God will hold him guiltless. You're familiar with these passages in the Book of Mormon as well. So it is in our theology what you have said. If somebody thinks it is, then they're misunderstanding. We need Christ. We can do nothing of ourselves without him.
What makes you think that Mormonism is more of a kind of rules-based and not a grace-based sort of system then, Russ? Because that's kind of what you've been hinting at, I think, in that.
Well, I guess I just have to go back to my treatise there that I just made, is that it says, after all you can do, and if you haven't done all you can do, it seems like there is no grace. And I'm not a detective or a lawyer, but to me it seems very simple. It seems to add up that the Mormon concept of grace is contingent upon whether or not a person has done all they can do. And if you haven't done all you can do, there is no grace. If you haven't denied yourself of all ungodliness, then the grace is not there for you. And so I'm looking at it from that perspective. Brian is giving his perspective, and it's something that we'll include that in our talk when I get back to Utah, and we'll hash this out some more.
Let me just quote Jesus Christ's statement from his visit to the Nephites. He said, it's not very long, that whoso repenteth and is baptized in my name shall be filled, and if he endureth to the end, behold, him will I hold guiltless before my Father at that day when I stand to judge the world. And that's really the message. Now, maybe it's getting confused, and maybe people think that that God is just a judge who's going to throw everybody out unless you're perfect, but that is not our theology.
We're going to just take a quick break to say that if you want to respond yourself to anything you've heard on the program today, perhaps you're a Mormon listening and you'd like to give your thoughts, perhaps you left the Mormon church, perhaps you've got another point of view, be interested to hear from you. Do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can, of course, find links to today's program, links to my guests, their websites, and indeed the article in the New York Times regarding the crisis of faith of Hans Mattson, a high-ranking Mormon leader in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Europe. That's all available at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. And don't forget, we're on Facebook and Twitter as well, at UnbelievableJB, if you want to follow me on Twitter and get in touch that way, or facebook.com/unbelievableJB. Those are the various ways to get in touch. Look forward to hearing from you.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Yes, on the programme today, we've been asking, is the Mormon Church suffering a crisis of faith? Russ East continues to join me here in the studio just as we approach the end of the second part of today's show. Russ was a Mormon up until the age of 14, left the church, now runs Utah Partnerships for Christ, reaching Mormons in Utah with the gospel as he sees it. Brian Hales is a long-standing member of the Mormon Church, joins me on the phone from Utah. These guys are going to get together, they tell me, afterwards to have a bite to eat and to continue this discussion. But we haven't got long to go, gentlemen, in this one. Wanted to quickly maybe pick up on one of these other issues that particularly were instrumental in Hans's story, some of the things that shook his faith. Let's talk about the fact that black men were excluded from the priesthood from the mid-1800s until 1978. He mentioned that earlier on. What's your take on this? Let's start with you, first of all, Russ, in this whole issue.
I've always wondered, how was that carried out in terms of someone, say, from Brazil or Spain, or what percentage of a person's racial background constituted not being able to hold the priesthood? I've often wondered that. It just doesn't seem to add up at all to anything biblical in terms of having a relationship with God or being saved and being able to worship him and be able to serve him in a local body. If I may just quickly, since Hans did bring up about the Book of Mormon, just quickly, I would want our listeners to know that here in the UK, we have UK Partnerships for Christ, a gentleman named Bobby Gilpin, who is in Middlesbrough, and he'd be glad to share with you and encourage you wherever you're at along these lines and discussions. But something I wanted to say really quickly, and that's just that when you read a book like Lord of the Rings or Chronicles of Narnia, we can gain some interesting perspectives possibly from those types of books. However, with the Book of Mormon, if we can't trust it geographically or historically, why would you want to trust it spiritually, eternally, for your soul, for the forgiveness of your sins? In the Bible, there are maps. We can jump on a plane and go to Israel, and we can see the walls of Jericho that have been uncovered. But I sincerely, without contention, hope and pray that my friends who are LDS will give that a really good second look. Because if you can't trust it geographically, if you can't trust it historically, why would you trust it spiritually for your soul?
Right. And coming to this issue of the issue of the fact that black men were excluded until 1978 from the priesthood, just a quick thought from you, Brian, before we have to go to a break and then start to wrap things up.
Well, which do you want me to respond to, blacks and the priesthood, or the geographic declaration that Russ just made that really is very problematic?
Okay, I'll give you a chance to respond to the second one in the third part of the program. But yeah, just firstly, this issue of black men in the priesthood and so on, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, there's a couple of things. First off, there is evidence that Joseph Smith allowed a few people of African descent to have the priesthood, and that a policy was developed during Brigham Young's time that didn't allow it. And the doctrine behind it is missing. There is no doctrine in our church telling us exactly why this happens. Now, does it surprise us? Well, if we look at, say, in the time of Moses, the only people that were allowed to have the priesthood were the tribe of Levi. We don't find the other 11 tribes complaining about it or demanding that they understand why. That was just what God had dictated. There does seem to be some tie-in to before we came here, we made choices, and that those choices, they influenced the exact races where we are. Paul talked about this, that God determined where we would be born and how and what skin color we would have. This isn't going to be the most satisfying answer for you, Justin or Russ, because we just don't know. That the history and the theology behind this are just not there. Why Brigham Young instituted this is not completely clear. But the good news is that in 1978, President Kimball, who was the church president, received a revelation, and that's been lifted, so it's no longer an issue.
Yes, just briefly, Russ.
Well, I'm not an expert on this topic by any means, but if our listeners were to go to mrm.org, a ministry directed by Bill McKeever in Salt Lake City, he's done extensive research. And just to get the other side of the coin, Mormonism Research Ministry has a lot of information there.
Okay. I mean, what's evident is that in the last year or so, the Mormon Church has been on something of a publicity campaign I received a very glitzy pack from the Mormon Church, and it had lots of testimonies on it of people of all kinds of different cultural backgrounds. And is that, Brian, in a sense, the Mormon Church trying to paint a better picture of its history as regards its treatment of black people and so on?
Well, undoubtedly that's the case. The Mormon leaders believe that they are commissioned by the God of heaven to preach the gospel to every creature throughout the world, and so those leaders are going to use all of the modern advertising, maybe not be the exact word, but they're going to use whatever types of approaches to that issue that to get them the success that they think their God, our God, my God, expects of them. So, yeah, they're going to do all of those things to get people introduced to these concepts that come through the Restoration.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for the third and final part of this discussion on the Mormon Church. We're asking, is it suffering a crisis of faith? My guests are Russ East of Utah Partnerships for Christ and Brian Hales, a long-standing member of the Mormon Church in Utah. I'm Justin Briley. You're listening to Unbelievable. We'll be back in a moment's time. Welcome back to Unbelievable, the third and final part of today's discussion. Back into our Mormon and former Mormon dialogue in a moment's time. I'm Justin Briley, and I'll be with you as well between 4 and 5 for the profile interview after today's show. Do stick around for that if you can, because if you're into apologetics, reasoned defense of the faith, then you'll be interested to meet the two guests that I'm talking to on today's profile interview. They are Greg Kokel, who joined me here on Unbelievable a few months ago. He's going to be talking about his ministry Stand to Reason out in California in the States and the radio show he's been broadcasting for a number of years there. And then I'll also be chatting to Craig Hazen, who is in charge of the apologetics program at Biola University, also in California. They have interesting stories to tell about how they got into that arena as well. So stay tuned for that between 4 and 5 if you can this afternoon. People often ask, when are these profile interviews going to be made available online? They will be, I promise, hopefully in time for the new year, as a podcast of their own. So I will let you know as soon as they're available. Next week on Unbelievable, we're covering the controversial issue of the Strange Fire Conference. Bible teacher John MacArthur out in the States recently caused uproar among many in the evangelical world by claiming that all charismatics are essentially spiritually deceived. He's a cessationist. He doesn't believe in the continuing gifts of the Holy Spirit, the charismatic gifts of the Holy Spirit. So there was much talk about that at the time that he hosted his Strange Fire Conference, but neither he nor any leaders from the conference are available to take part in the discussion on it next week. So instead, I'm going to be having US cessationist Doug Wilson, who's a pastor out in the States, debating reformed charismatic blogger Adrian Warnock, who's been on the program a few times before, all about the rights and wrongs of the modern charismatic movement and whether the gifts of the Spirit, speaking in tongues, prophecy, healing and so on, are gifts for today's church. So come back if you want to hear an excellent discussion on that same time next week. For now, time to get back into the final part of today's discussion.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
And the question we've been asking on today's programme is the Mormon Church suffering a crisis of faith? We started at the beginning of today's show playing out the story of Hans Mattson, a high-ranking Mormon leader in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Europe. Well, he's recently gone public with his doubts about the Church, especially the historical claims of the Book of Mormon and the character of its founder, Joseph Smith. Is he among a number of people questioning their faith in the Mormon Church with the advent of the internet and all the resources that are out there? It's people like my guest Russ East here in the studio who are making those resources so readily available online to Mormons who have questions about their faith. Russ was a Mormon until the age of 14. He left the Mormon Church to become part of the, as it were, mainline Protestant Christian faith. But he's been in conversation today with Brian Hales, who continues to be a member of the Mormon Church in Utah. He's an author, a historian, and he's been talking particularly about the history of Joseph Smith as regards polygamy. That's been his particular area of research over the last several years. Well, what we got to in that last section is something I'd like to pursue in the closing minutes of today's programme, gentlemen, is this issue of the geography of the claims of the Book of Mormon. I've heard this said many times before, Russ, and you sketched it out briefly there, but that whereas if you go to the Bible, to Old and New Testament sites that are mentioned, you will find the archaeological evidence of the places that are mentioned where these stories are purported to have taken place and so on. You know, we can go to the very streets where Jesus walked and all the rest of it. That's not the case as far as you're concerned with the Book of Mormon. Do you want to just sketch that out?
Sure. And that's why Christianity, that's why Jesus stands alone. He can stand alone. He said, I will build my church. The gates of hell shall not prevail against it. I have confidence in what Jesus said. I'm a part of his church, and I don't need a restoration. I don't need a volume of scripture that claims to be on the same level as the Bible. It says that the precepts in that book will get you closer to God than any other book. And, you know, I want to just encourage anyone listening to go to also to exmormonfiles.org. Earl Erskine was a former bishop in the LDS Church. He lives in Salt Lake City, and he interviews people who have came out of the LDS Church in Utah and have gone through these questions about the Book of Mormon. And again, I don't mean to be spiteful or to be, you know, rash or harsh. I just am so passionate. I want people to be freed from the bondage of having to follow through with all of the things in the temple ceremonies, and it goes on, and it just... It's troubling to me, accepting all these other doctrines and so on.
I mean, you're obviously coming to this with a huge amount of background knowledge, as obviously is Brian. But for those who perhaps are less familiar with what the Book of Mormon claims, just to sketch it out, it claims to tell the history of various South American tribes, which had a new revelation of Jesus Christ and so on. But your contention is that in terms of those histories, there's really no archaeological evidence.
Right. Well, when you go to the Hill Cumorah, which I've been to in upstate New York, and Brian knows this, there's never been any excavations there. And when you go to Temple Square in downtown Salt Lake, you go into the conference center, and there's beautiful paintings, and they depict these stories in the Book of Mormon. But you ask, at the Hill Cumorah, there's supposed to have been a huge battle, thousands upon thousands of you know, skulls and bones and weapons and things, but there's nothing there. They haven't even done the excavation, and I know of I've seen the Roman different things in York here in England, and things that can be brought up out of the ground, and Jesus went to Thomas and he said, here I am, you know, and Thomas had doubts, but Jesus showed him. Jesus showed himself to him even though he had doubts, and we have to have faith, of course, but I believe that truth never fears investigation, and I my heart just goes out to anyone who has embraced the LDS thinking, because they don't know that if they ever decide to leave it and follow Jesus, they're going to have a possible bishop's court and a lot of trauma, and I don't want to see people have to go through that.
Sure. Okay. Do you want to respond to any of these issues then, Brian, just as we start to close out the program, regarding the geographical claims, the archaeology and so on?
Sure. I'd love to. I wish we had time for me to respond to all of these things. And I do feel your love, Russ, and your concern. I have the same for you, because I believe this restored gospel is true and Joseph was a prophet. But regarding the geography, it's a straw man argument. You're setting up this is what we should believe, or did the Mormons do believe, and here we can show that it isn't there. We have never claimed to know where the geography was. Just last week, I was in Guatemala with a medical team doing humanitarian work, and we flew over to Tikal, and we saw the temples there in an area where tens of thousands or more people once lived, and there is nothing there. We have no clue what was going on. Now, was this where the Book of Mormon took place? I really don't care. But there are lots of places where the geography does fit. There are some Mormon apologists who think they figured it out. I really don't care about it. But to use this as an argument against our church just suggests to me that you really don't have good arguments, because there's very good responses to it, and we won't go through them here. When it comes to the Book of Mormon, I just encourage people to read it. There's a promise there in the back of it that says if you read it with sincere faith, God will tell you if it's true or not. And that's the encouragement that I would give. You need faith. he talked earlier about some DNA studies. Again, the book that came out on that was written by a plant DNA person who really didn't know what he was talking about. And if you look at exactly what we're finding, it's not a surprise, and it's very consistent with what we believe regarding the Book of Mormon people. And we can't get into the details, but again, these are not strong arguments against the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon in my mind.
Sure, and I didn't expect you guys to come out agreeing with each other by the end of today's program. I rarely expect that on Unbelievable, but Brian, I appreciate you being on the program today and being willing to field these objections and some of these issues. Thank you very much. If people want to find out a bit more about you and your work, where should they go?
Well, I've got a website. It's josephsmithspolygamy.com, and I'm getting ready to upgrade it. My wife is embarrassed about its overall format, but the documentation there is very good. So that would be a starting point.
So it's substance, if not style, at the moment. But
can I also plug my daughter's YouTube videos, What Mormons Believe. She's put these together. They're professionally done. What Mormons Believe, it's a YouTube set of videos.
Okay. Well, plugged it has been. And I'll make sure, obviously, to link to your own website from the podcast of today's program. Thank you for joining us, Brian. Perhaps, there might be another chance to do something down the line where we maybe go into one of these particular issues in a bit more depth. We've only been able to obviously skate the surface of them on today's show. But very, very good of you to join me today on the program. Thank you for being with me.
It's been great. And yeah, I'd love to come back and chat with you anytime. And thanks to Russ as well.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Russ, for being with me today. Just any closing thoughts as we finish up today's program before you fly back to Utah?
I just appreciate this opportunity. Thank you so much. And if I can be of any encouragement, our website, the name of the ministry is Utah Partnerships for Christ. And here in the UK, UK Partnerships for Christ. Just Google us and we'd be privileged to interact with you.
Great. And as ever, we'll be making sure those links are available from the Unbelievable website. Thank you for listening today. If you want to get in touch and talk about your reactions to the guests today, to Hans Mattson's story as well, be interested in your thoughts on that. You can email me unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And don't forget, we're available online. You can find this program there. You can get more information, links to the Facebook and Twitter accounts and so on. That's at premier.org.uk/unbelievable, and links to my guests and so on all available from there. Thanks again to Russ East for joining me today, Brian Hales as well, and thank you for listening. Coming up next, we've got some of your feedback to the last few weeks of programming here on the show.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, as ever, if you want to get in touch, don't forget you can do that by email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And of course, you can find us online and like the Facebook page. You can go to the Twitter account @UnbelievableJB. Send me a message that way. Always interested to hear from you. So on the letters front today, got quite a few responses still coming into the show of a few weeks ago now when David Robertson took on the National Secular Society on the issue of evangelism in RE lessons. Before we get to that, I want to also bring some of your comments on the recent interview I had on the show with N.T. Wright, where he was answering a diverse range of questions, theology, biblical questions and all sorts. Firstly, though, let me tell you that Peter Mills has been in touch. He's from Real Time Christian Ministries, and he wants to let us know about an apologetics day that he's hosting on the 23rd of November. Christian philosopher Peter S. Williams is delivering two teaching lectures on that day. That's Saturday, the 23rd of November. You say it's not the same as anything you may have seen before. It's basically a C.S. Lewis day, tying in with the 50th anniversary, with a teaching event in the morning with Peter, and then a C.S. Lewis-based film and quiz with Christian content in the afternoon. And there's an evangelistic event in the afternoon as well for Bishopstoke Evangelical Church, where I attend and I'm on the leadership team. So if you want to find out more about that happening on the 23rd of November in Bishopstoke, that's www.rtcm.org.uk, stands for Real Time Christian Ministries, rtcm.org.uk. Thanks for getting in touch, Peter. Always happy to mention apologetics events going on around the country. Let me know if you've got one happening. I'd be happy to give it a plug on the programme. Let's go to some of those comments on N.T. Wright now. Rich in Stafford, Virginia. Now, I'm not sure whether your email to me is it's meant sincerely or slightly tongue-in-cheek, sarcastically. I'll just read it and listeners can make their own mind up here. You say, "I'm so thankful to live in this age of the Western Church. Imagine the darkness of our forebears in the early church and at the time of the Reformation, who had no biblical life. They didn't have Tom Wright to set things right. Most biblical scholars of the past would consider completely novel approaches to theology to be something to be wary of and humble about. But Tom reveals things we have never heard, and we now have the opportunity for life where death once reigned." I'll leave it to you to interpret what angle Rich is taking on that. N.T. Wright joined me to take various of your questions on hell, heaven, creation, the role of women in the church, the Old Testament, apologetics. All kinds of issues were covered in a show a couple of weeks ago. Many people very thankful for it. Let me just quickly mention here Sam, who got in touch to say, "Wow, N.T. Wright nailed it. Thanks for getting him on the air to answer those questions. I could have listened to hours more of that. Hint, hint, get him back on the show if you can. That is really all I have to say. It was great to hear his perspective on women in ministry, hell, justification, and, well, everything else you discussed. On my way to buy some N.T. Wright books now. Have a good one." Thank you very much. Glad you enjoyed it. Tim Boyle in Kobe in Japan sometimes emails me, says, "Thanks for having N.T. Wright on your show. I'd heard of him, but hadn't actually heard him speak. I can see I have a great deal to learn from him on various biblical issues, and I found his explanations and background information very compelling. However, there is one point where I would question his conclusions, though I must also admit that he may be right after all. It's his interpretation of the Genesis account of Cain building a city and where the people could have come from. The idea that Adam and Eve were simply two of a population of hominids that God chose, just as he had Abraham and Sarah later on, is certainly a possibility, though I think there are some biblical issues that would raise as well. My primary objection to that, however, is that the record of nature simply doesn't support it. The evidence we do have clearly shows that modern humans are not descended from any known hominid, and so any inference of common descent is simply an assumption based on Darwinian assertions about an as yet undiscovered human ancestor. As to how you could explain where Cain got his wife and enough people to build a city, if the biblical description of Adam and Eve and their children living very long lives and being fertile for a large portion of it, within 100 years even, you would have many thousands of brothers, sisters, nieces, etc. And since there would be no genetic issues with marrying your sister or brother at that stage, Cain's wife could easily have been one of his sisters. So there are two possible scenarios that fit the biblical data. And so it's a matter of fitting all of that data with the scientific record as well. Okay, thank you very much. That's one person's view on that whole issue that was touched on briefly by Tom. Joseph Bessett in Upland, California says, "I'm a frequent listener, big fan of your show. Heard the recent show with N.T. Wright. As much as I enjoyed it, I was more than a little surprised at the end when Mr. Wright suggested that in the Catholic Church, the Pope one day might come out and say that women could be priests. He contrasted this with the Anglican Church, in which there's much anguish and controversy over the matter. Well, I know that Mr. Wright is not a Catholic. I'm troubled that your listeners were so misinformed by him about the Catholic Church's position on the subject." You go on to give an excerpt from the website of Catholic Answers, which goes to say that there's certainly no chance that the church will change its views on the ordination of women. You say, "Popes of the Catholic Church do not have the power or authority to overturn definitive teachings on matters of faith and morals." Thank you very much. So quite a few people very interested, and also a lot of reaction on Twitter and Facebook to that Tom Wright interview. And again, a reminder, if you want to get hold of his latest massive volume on Paul, it's called Paul and the Faithfulness of God. It's published here in the UK by SPCK. Thanks, Al, for getting in touch with me. Wanted to weigh in on that programme with David Robertson and Terry Sanderson of the National Secular Society, debating the place of evangelicals presenting the gospel in religious education. Al says, "Shalom, peace be with you, and assalamu alaikum." Al says, "While I don't necessarily agree with everything David Robertson said, I have to say that I found Terry Sanderson's views extremely depressing. This growing hysteria about impressionable young children being exposed to belief systems that differ from their parents is terribly naive. The bottom line is, in a multicultural, multi-faith society, children will be exposed to a vast diversity of views and opinions, many of which their parents won't agree with. That'll happen in school, round friends' houses, at the bus stop, on TV, and now through various types of social media like YouTube, Facebook and Twitter. I was raised as a Christian, and my parents were never anxious about trying to protect me from all the views and opinions they didn't share. They saw my exposure to different perspectives from theirs as a natural and inevitable thing that was healthy and normal. Children may be impressionable, but they're not idiots. And like all of us, they have to make sense of the world for themselves and make their own minds up. I feel like the National Secular Society have got it into their heads that it's a fundamental human right never to have to hear opinions that you disagree with. Thank you very much, Al. Neil from California says, thanks for having David Robertson and Terry Sanderson on the show. Their exchange was interesting, though I found it a bit difficult to maintain my patience with Mr. Robertson at times. He seemed unnecessarily defensive and unproductively combative, and at times engaged in what seemed a willful misunderstanding of Mr. Sanderson's words and intent. Where I live in the US, we sometimes see certain evangelical groups interpreting as an attack on themselves any measure which limits their ability to flout our constitutional separation of church and state. Mr. Robertson's reactions put me in mind of those evangelicals. Additionally, I had no trouble whatsoever understanding Mr. Sanderson's desire was to realise a school system which doesn't peddle one particular philosophy, whether his own or any religious sects. How Mr. Robertson interpreted this as wishing for schools which didn't teach philosophy, I can only speculate. Finally, what Mr. Robertson sees as pushing an atheist agenda is a bit beyond me. Is he suggesting that a basic mathematics text is pushing atheism unless it clearly states that 2 plus 2 equals 4 because Jesus is Lord? Surely not. Where does he draw the line? Thank you very much. And another David says, thank you very much for the show on religion and education. I'm really struggling with this issue as my 5-year-old daughter is in primary 2 and is constantly getting preached at. I've been in to speak with the head teacher on 2 separate occasions, each time highlighting my concerns, and each time I've had a lot of hand-waving excuses and downright refusal to acknowledge the appropriateness of what is being allowed to pass. Some examples: the children pray at least twice daily before their break and lunch. Twice weekly, the pupils attend assembly led by a local minister who talks about God and then leads the children in worship. This is entirely separate from the biased RE that happens in the classroom, where she has been led to believe in a worldwide flood, amongst other things. Last Easter, she came home very upset. I asked her what happened. She told me that a man named Jesus got big spikes through his hand and feet by his friends. She was 4 years old at the time. I have failed to see any objective teaching of religion, just a favouring of Christianity. When I inquired about the lack of diversity being taught, the response was most concerning. I was told that the local ministers rotate, so it's a Presbyterian, Methodist, Baptist, Brethren, etc., and so it isn't just the one denomination. I pointed out that was all Protestant Christianity and was met with no response. When I asked about the teaching of other religions, she told me they briefly cover a few other major religions in primary 6 and 7. I was told I could withdraw my daughter from assembly, but that she would be the only one not going, and as such, may be vulnerable to bullying as a result. Anyway, thank you very much for your interactions on that, David. Obviously not happy with the current state of the way religious education is delivered in the UK, or certainly at least in your daughter's school, and in the associated acts of worship and so on. Sorry I couldn't get to more of the many emails that have come in the last few weeks or so. Well, before I sign off, there's a special anniversary being celebrated this coming week on the 22nd of November. It's 50 years since the death of C.S. Lewis, one of the UK's greatest Christian thinkers. Well, to commemorate that, I've put together a series of thoughts that will be running out on our breakfast show at about 7:30 each weekday morning. A little bit of a difference, though. The thought of the day this week is going to be presented by one of C.S. Lewis's most famous literary creations. Why don't I play you the first one?
Thought of the day on Premiere.
My dear Wormwood, I have decided to prepare a series of short thoughts to encourage junior devils such as yourself in the daily work of tempting. And what better way than by radio? For every gift the enemy gives to those he loves, the insufferable word, has the potential to be twisted by our Father below for his diabolical purposes. Indeed, modern technology has become one of our most fruitful avenues of late. You might think the possibility of mass communication via internet, ideas and freedoms shared, might signal a terrible defeat on our part. There have been some casualties, of course, but fortunately, the technological revolution has also given free rein to individualism, constant distractions, and of course the private indulging of selfish vices. Indeed, our colleagues in charge of the Department for Self-Gratification and Lust can hardly keep up with the surge in business. Yes, the world has moved into an ever more technological age. Happily, many of the human beings have confused that fact with it therefore being a more rational age. A lie that we have been keen to foster for some time now. Of course, in the process, our own existence has increasingly been called into question. Do not be discouraged. As one of their more observant authors once pointed out, there are two equal and opposite errors the human race can fall into about devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence, the other is to believe, and feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. They themselves are equally pleased by both errors. Our policy for the moment is to conceal ourselves. Do not become complacent, however. Only last week I heard of one of my underlings who let a patient slip through his fingers. He was a young man who seemed surely bound for our father's house, and yet experienced a moment of clarity while reading the blog of a Christian friend of his. One thing led to another, and within days the enemy had welcomed him across the divide. As for the young tempter himself, he was dealt with. So be warned. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
Yes, a Screwtape of the Screwtape Letters presenting the Thought of the Day slot on Premier Christian Radio this coming week. And the voice there was Peter Byram. Thank you for being with me on the show today. Let me tell you what's coming up next week.
You're unbelievable.
We're going to be investigating this Strange Fire conference. Bible teacher John MacArthur recently held a conference at his church in California, claiming that Christians in the charismatic movement are deceived. In fact, most of them are not Christians. Well, we're going to be debating the issue of cessationism. Are the gifts of the Holy Spirit, the charismatic gifts of healing, prophecy, tongues, and so on, for today's church? People with two different views join me. Doug Wilson is well known as an author, blogger, pastor out in the States. He's a cessationist. A continuationist, Adrian Warnock, who's a reformed charismatic blogger, joins me to debate with him. Hope you can join me as well. Same time as ever here on Premier, 2:30 p.m. and online at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. If you're online, I'll say goodbye now. If you're staying here on Premier, do join me in a moment's time as I'm joined by two guests for the profile interview.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint or stain project, saving is at the top of your to-do list. Save now with buy one, get one half off select paints, stains, and primers from top brands like Valspar, HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, and Cabot via Visa gift card rebate. Find more Memorial Day deals now at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 5/15 through 5/28.